So we're happy to have Hiroshi for what may be the last formal talk of this workshop, since there will be such an intensive schedule of talks with the math workshop beginning next week. His title is Cyborg Wit and Transforms of Non-Commutative Cell Atoms.
Thank you. So actually, I want to thank the organizers, not only for giving me the opportunity to this talk, but let me participate in this wonderful workshop, and I learned a lot. And I'm particularly happy that this is the work that I did while I'm here, participating in the workshop with the postdoc here, Koji Hashimoto. And also, this is the second time I'm given the opportunity to talk at this program. And I promise that I won't go 2 hours like the last time. So this is... This is based on the work that just appeared, and also some of the work that I have been doing with a postdoc at Caltech, Yuji Okawa. And these are related papers. Hong Liu conjectured the form of the driver we can transform, which we later proved. Sunil Mukhi and Surya Narayana, and independently Hong Liu and Jeremy Michelson also wrote paper which is related to the last one over here. And there are some other works, of course, then I will refer to them as I go. The non-commutative gauge theory is a very interesting limit of string theory, and it's worth exploring the physics of that limit. And this is a limit where you decouple. This is a limit where you decouple gravity, so you take alpha prime goes to zero, but in a little bit funny way that you scale the metric along the plane to be very small. So sometimes it's more transparent to do the T duality on it, if it is on a torus, and keeping the B field to be finite. And so these ij, etc., are coordinate, and for definiteness on the two P brains. And most of the time, I will consider a case when B field is non-zero for all the spatial direction of this DP brain, although in some cases we will consider some other situation. And this is finite, so the non-commutative parameter is defined as an inverse of this matrix. And then there is an open string metric, which remains finite in this limit. So this is the one which scales to be small, and then I compensate it by multiplying this factor. And then in this limit, you get non-commutative field theory, where the coordinate obeys this commutation relation. So for theta constant, you just have a harmonic oscillator representing this algebra. Later, in the second half of the talk, I will flip the sign over here, make it plus, because that's a convention that some of the paper in solitons are using. You probably will not notice it, but I have to say it anyway. Now, non-commutative gauge theory seems to capture various important aspects of string theory in a simplified setting, and that's why it's interesting. For example, tachyon condensations and the D-brains are the solitons on D-brain are really explained in a very quantitatively also nice way. And some of the explanation for this agreement is given from the point of view of string field theory by Witten, for example. And another interesting thing is that there seems to, so this is related to that, but there seems to be a universal way to construct a fairly large class of solitons in a very simple way if we use non-commutative variable, much simpler often than in the standard field theory on commutative space. And this is really analogous to, actually, as we heard last week from Tsubi, Bach, Sen, and Gross during the conference, the construction of various solutions in the vacuum string field theory, that those are based on projection operators. And in the non-commutative theory, those appear in a simplified setup. However, those are not the only solutions, and we'll see that there are solutions which are not constructed directly using projection operators, and I will also discuss some of those later. Now, so those are good. So those, we have this nice way to construct a large class of classical solutions. But those are often difficult to interpret by itself directly when they are expressed in non-commutative variable, just because we don't live in non-commutative space. And more specifically, for example, the shape and the size, when they are expressed in non-commutative variables, are not gauge invariant quantities. So when we say that, well, this is a Gaussian type solutions and the size of this is like that and etc. But those are not gauge invariant concept. So therefore, in order to give a physical interpretation of those solutions, we have to evaluate them by using gauge invariant observables. So by that, of course, I'm just doing the classical theory. So by that, I mean that I construct a set of functional of the non-commutative gauge field, which is gauge invariant, and just plug in the value of classical solution into that observable and find out what they are. And there is an interesting story to that, which I'd like to discuss a little bit. And the basic ingredient of this observable are called open Wilson line. And those are discussed first in the Japanese group at KK, Ishibashi, Iso, Kawai, and Kitazawa. And last time it was studied in detail and had various interesting observations in the paper by Gross, Aki Hashimoto, and Izaki, who is not related to my collaborator. And so the idea is this. Now suppose we have some composite of field strengths of the non-commutative gauge series and their derivatives. So like F mu nu or F mu nu square and things like that in Noetherian non-commutative gauge theory. Now, the gauge transformation works in such a way that O of X get multiplied to UX OX UX inverse, where this is some matrix-valued function of non-commutative coordinate X. Now, normally, if you have such object, then we can just take trace over gauge group, and then this part and this part get canceled, and then you have gauge invariant observable. But it doesn't work that way in non-commutative theory, because you have to bring this over here and have this canceled. And since X do not commute with each other, so this cannot be done. The way to do it is to take trace over X, so to integrate over X as well, because that is similar in spirit to taking a trace in this harmonic oscillator space. So you can bring this over here. But that only gives you the zero mode of this gauge invariant observer. So this doesn't give you as many gauge invariant observables as there are in the commutative setup. So in order to see exactly what kind of difficulty there is, it's useful to take the Fourier transform of this. And let's take a trace in the group only. So this is, when I write trace with small letter, I mean trace over group index. So for example, if you have UN gauge theory, I only take trace over UN. And then I compute this thing. Then this gets transformed into, so I actually neglect writing trace over here, EIKX, UX, OX, U, X inverse. Now since I'm integrating over X, which is the same as trace operation in non-commutative space, so I can move this over here, but I have to commute with this X-dependent factor. So for example, this is equal to U of X minus K theta of e to the ikx, because x is a coordinate as well as momentum, so e to the ikx generates translation in the coordinate space. So therefore, the commutation relation is such that this is equal to like that, where this is, by this I mean kj theta j I. So therefore, if I bring this, so now since we have x integral, we can bring this over here, but then there is a discrepancy, because we have U inverse of X and U of X minus like that. So therefore, they don't cancel. But if you write it in this way, then it's fairly clear in retrospect what one should have done, namely to introduce over here some first order exponential of gauge field which compensate for this difference in the coordinate. And that is called open Wilson line. So the idea is instead of doing that, one consider trace of dx of e to the ikx of ox that doesn't end here, and that I multiply first order exponential of gauge field from x to x plus k theta and kj theta ji d tau, so that the phase factor that comes from this exactly cancel the discrepancy between these two. So that's the idea of Ishibashi, Iso, Kawai, and Kitazawa, which they arrived at from their own logic of 2B matrix theory. And but that was pretty interesting. So this gives you a large class of gauge. Namely, for any composite operator you can write down in this way, there is a way to construct gauge invariant observable. Now, so we have gauge invariant observable. The question is that what are we measuring that with? Namely, it's one thing to have observable, but we have to understand what they are observing in order to make physical sense out of them. And so, for example, there are large amount of ambiguities. So this works for any contour from x to x plus k theta. It doesn't have to be straight. It can be curved or anything, as far as the endpoints are separated by k theta. And so, for example, there are also various ways to insert this operator. It can be located at the end of the open Wilson line, which are separated by k theta, or it can be smeared out over the line and smeared out in a various different way. So given O of x, there are infinitely many ways to construct. So what are the canonical way to do that? So that's what Aokawa and I start thinking about. Actually, my original motivation was slightly different, but it came down to that, namely that what are the nice class of gauge invariant observable that we have good physical interpretation of.
This
was claimed to be complete set in the paper by Gross, Hashimoto, and Izaki, that it is an over-complete set in the sense that I just said. Because, for example, you can mimic the insertion of local operator by having small bump in the open Wilson line. So this is, well, if you believe that closed Wilson loop in standard gauge theory is give you an over-complete set of observable, one can try to construct a similar logic to say that this gives you over-complete set. There was some such a statement in the paper by Gross, Hashimoto, and Izaki, so I'm just quoting that.
Actually, so could you say a little bit more, or remind us a little bit more, how you get the local operator from a bump? How do you get O of X from a, you say you can get that from a bump on a Wilson line?
Yeah, because, this is well known, right? Because if you have Wilson line, mm-hmm. and if you make small bump, this is like inserting field strings over here. So in principle, if you consider all the possible open Wilson line, that accounts for all these operators.
Do I have to think about x as operators or as the functions of x as operators?
Well, dynamical variable to gauge field is a function of x. X is just a coordinate which just happen to do not commute with each other.
Yeah, but then. What do I do with those integrals?
So I didn't give you the precise definition of this. This has been rather formal. And what I mean is that integrate, expand this, and we have to be careful about ordering. And after expanding out, we take all the star product, and then integrate this. So here I'm implicit that we are taking star product when we expand it, as well as including doing the multiplication of the group indices.
If you think about the star product, then you can take the
x's
to the commutator.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you can at least have the path ordering makes sense, because if the x were
upper. Oh, excuse me, yeah.
Then I would have difficulty.
Well, the tau is commuting.
The tau is commuting. Yeah, which number is smaller than which other number?
So to make sense of this more precisely, I write everything in the commutative coordinate and then take star product and then integrate in a normal way in X. But that is the same as taking trace in the Hilbert space generated by this algebra. So I'll come to that kind of correspondence more later. But so anyway, So is it clear so far that so we have a gauge invariant observable in which, in principle, we can plug in all these non-commutative solitons in and see what they are, but we don't have a physical interpretation of that, so we don't know what they were computing, although they are gauge invariant. So, but there is a nice subset of gauge invariant observable that naturally comes if you realize non-commutative gauge theory coming from low energy limit of string theory, that is that how they couple to closed string field in the bulk. So there are closed string fields in the bulk which are decoupled, but now acts as a source or parameter to the gauge theory on the D-brain. So those give you operators on the gauge theory on D-brain. So they give you a natural class of operator. For example, graviton coupled to energy momentum tensor of the gauge theory. So that's the way you can define energy momentum tensor here. And so on. So Okawa and I developed a way to classify those gauge invariant observable by looking at the coupling of gauge theory to graviton in the bulk. And so actually, I'm coming to the question that Harman was asking, which hopefully resolves this kind of notation and confusion about this kind of notation. The gauge invariant observable that I'm going to write down are mostly easily expressed by introducing the following notation. We have capital X, which is a small x, plus theta ij, aj of x. So we combine small x with the field strength, so that, for example, if you compute the commutator of them, so in principle, this is a matrix-valued non-commutative operator. And if you compute commutator, then you get something like, so for example, field strengths can be expressed by commutator of this large operator, an operator capital X. And so there is a rule to translate this kind of computation of X integral into the Fock computation in the Fock space of X. So for example, if you want to do this kind of integral, and for simplicity, I normalize this by Parthian of theta, and they take trace over group index. So this is just over group. Then one can easily show that this is equivalent to taking a large trace of the same set of observable, now expressed in terms of this capital X. But this is trace over gauge group as well as the Fock space generated by this. Now, so this will resolve, hopefully, Harman's question if I, for example, introduce the following formula. So for example, if you write e to the ikx and take trace, then this you can show is equal to dx of Parthian of theta of small trace of first order exponential of this type. Okay, so here we have to use commutative variable to express this object because it involves operation like that. But here we are just taking trace in the Fock space as well as trace over group indices. And here I don't have operation like that, so this by itself makes sense. So this gives you some kind of translation between this expression, and it's most convenient to use this expression for many purposes. And this is also a link of the matrix theory computation to non-commutative gauge theory computation. So this is, in some sense, you may regard as a matrix theory variable, and this is expression in terms of the commutative, not commutative, but the gauge theory variable. So,
excuse me, it is lower, small x.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. Times e to the ikx. Thank you. It's good that somebody is paying. You're keeping an eye on what I say. Now, what we are mostly interested in how to interpret many non-commutative solitons as D-brain on D-brains. And so for example, then we would be interested in how the D-brain charges are distributed. The solution for the D-brain charge for the solutions are distributed. So the kind of gauge invariant observable that I'm going to discuss today is related to coupling of non-commutative gauge theory to Ramon-Ramon potentials. So we are on D2P brain. So the spatial coordinate goes from 1 to 2P, which are summarized into this coordinate. And if I write capital trace, there is no X integral. We still have integral in the time direction of the D brain. So the coupling is expressed like that. So this is the time direction D2P. And then we have a coupling of, say, Ramon-Ramon zero form to some source, and then coupling like that. So you may say that this is D0 brain density. This is D2 brain density, etc. So what are they? Well, so let me write down the formula. So J of K, which is D0 brain density, is given by trace of e to the ikx. Exactly the object that I wrote over there. So the D0 brain density is just a trace of open Wilson loop and straight open Wilson loop. So it is a straight loop which goes from x to x plus k theta along the straight line. And this you can derive from string theory computation is the D0 brain charge density. So if you have non-commutative soliton, plug the soliton into this formula, you can see what the profile of D0 brain density is. And similarly, Jij of K is equal to I times trace of Xi, Xj of e to the ikx. Sure, please.
You probably already said this, but in a normal two-brain, it's magnetic flux that corresponds to zero-brain charge, right?
Yeah, that is, so this, we will see that, yes?
So this expression is not exactly that, right?
We will see that if we evaluate that, we will see that both of this constant contribution from background B field, yeah, as well as additional contribution coming from solitons. And we will see that in some examples. So probably it's easier if we discuss that. In fact, if you evaluate those, we will see those explicitly.
The profile, is it smeared out along this line or in some sense? Or are you going to tell us that?
What?
The D0 charge is smeared out along the Wilson line?
No. This is a probe. So this is a Fourier, if you Fourier transform back into coordinate space, this will give you the profile of D0 brain density along the brain. Probably it will be clear if we discuss examples that that's what we mean by this one. X contains A. Capital X
so
contains A.
Yeah.
I'm using a shorthand notation here. So for the purpose of constructing an exact Zeiberg-Witten map, it is most useful to look at, so this is D2P, D2 brain charge. And in general, we can do that, and we can construct any DN brain, D2N brain charge on D2 brain using this construction. Now, so for the purpose of constructing Zeiberg-Witten map, it will be most useful to look at charge which is co-dimension 2 below, the top charge. And this is given by symmetric trace. I'll explain what it means. Xi1, Xi2 go to Xi2p minus 3, Xi2p minus 2. Those are commutators times e to the ikx. Those are all capital X, so it includes this gauge field. And then I anti-symmetrize with respect to these indices. So let me explain the notation. So it's self-evident that what those mean, those are field strengths. And then I insert op Wilson line here. Now, I meant symmetric trace. What I mean, normally, would be just to expand this in power of x, and then take symmetrize it. Here, it's very slight subtlety because this operator is not trace class. So Okawa and I came up with some more precise way to define the notion of symmetric trace, which reduced to the notion of symmetric trace when matrix is finite dimensional. But I will spare you with those details, that rest assured that there is a definition of symmetric trace in this case. And by the way, though all these computations, if you write it in this x coordinate, is actually related to the earlier computation by Taylor and Ramstrong, where they computed the coupling of various dark field like energy momentum tensor, Ramon-Ramon field to matrix theory. Basically, if you use this dictionary, you can translate that into the language of non-commutative gauge theory. Although Okawa and I noticed that in retrospect in our second paper, that you could have looked at those early papers of matrix theory to arrive at the similar expression. Yes?
Can we go beyond the dimension of the brain as in the Myers equation?
You can. So here, for simplicity, I have been suppressing all the scalar field. But you can, if you want, introduce the scalar field which corresponds to transverse coordinate. And then you can construct a higher brain charge in a similar way.
Can I ask a question, general question about the gauge of brain
operator? Yeah.
In ordinary field theory, you can make composite operators by taking two operators and evaluating the point, normal ordering the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a similar thing here? For example, can you take a product of these single trace operators and just define it composite?
Yeah, you can.
And, okay. But you don't really think about it as a local operator here. It's
A non-local operator when expressed in terms of non-commutative gauge theory variable, because it involves the open Wilson lines. Okay. Now, the D2P brain charge is particularly interesting because if you use, so here so far we have been using the description to describe the D brain using non-commutative gauge field, but there is an alternative description of the same physics using field theory on commutative space. And so there is a theory on commutative space. You could have done that with large amount of B field. And then there is a gauge theory described by some gauge field. And if you use that gauge theory, then the same D2P brain charge is expressed as epsilon I1 I2P minus 2 IJ of trace of FIJ plus theta inverse of IJ, where this small FIJ is just the field strength of this commutative gauge field. This I hope is fairly clear. So therefore, by requiring that this is equal to that, the physics should be independent of which variable you choose to describe it, you'll find that at least the abelian part of the field strength of commutative variable is expressed in terms of this non-commutative variable. And that's the solution to Zeiberg-Witten equation, at least for the abelian gauge theory. So if you're considering abelian gauge theory, then you don't have trace. And this gives you an exact solution to the Zeiberg-Witten map.
In the commutative case, I suppose you have more products for one thing?
No, this is just that.
I mean, just the number of indices. Just like, okay, I see.
So here is IJ, which is contracted by IJ.
Okay.
And then you have D and 2P minus 2 indices.
Second question, the expression above depends on K.
Yeah, this is a Fourier transform of that. So this is in the Fourier basis. So you can Fourier transform this back into coordinate basis, and that you identify that with this one. Okay, so that's the Zeiberg-Witten map. But so far we only have abelian part of Zeiberg-Witten map, and it's very desirable to have no abelian version of that. But it's kind of tricky because if you remove a trace, then this is not gauge invariant, but gauge covariant. And this is also not gauge invariant, but covariant. And then they transform differently because that algorithm map also involves a map between gauge transformation variables. And in fact, there are evidences that gauge groups are not isomorphic, as a recent paper by Harvey suggests. So there is some subtlety in constructing. What you can do is, I think what the better way to do it is consider all possible gauge invariant observables and compare them. And actually, that's what I'm going to do in the rest of this discussion. Namely, instead of, so here, if you just look, compare them, I only learn about Abelian part of field strength, which is not very much. But if you consider all other DN brain charge at the same time, you gain more information because, for example, you learn about something like F wedge F, which contains information about non-Abelian part of the field strength, as well as the Abelian part. So you learn a little bit more about this. So that's what I'm going to do. Now, so since I'm talking about the Zeibach-Witten map, I just want to make one comment about the two things, which was first, of course, pointed out as the name suggests, Zeibach-Witten, that there are two equivalent descriptions of same physics in terms of commutative variable and in terms of non-commutative variable. By this, I mean the non-Abelian gauge field on commutative space and non-Abelian gauge field in non-commutative space. And the non-commutative variable, I have been denoting by capital AX. The advantage of that is action is simple. It is just dx of trace of F square. And there are explicit way to generate solitons of this theory is known. So this is very useful to describe physics of it. But interpretation is a little bit obscure. Now, there is commutative variable that I introduced here, for which action is not known. So we don't know what the dynamics is, except by mapping into non-commutative variable. The reason is that, of course, if the alpha prime is small, you start with a Bohr insert action, where this small f is this field strength of a commutative variable. But then you can have lots of alpha prime corrections. And the problem is that Gij is upper index ij scale like alpha prime minus 2. So therefore, you can take as many derivatives as you like, and you don't lose. Those are not suppressed by alpha prime expansion. So therefore, this can have lots of higher derivative corrections that so far none of us have been able to control, except by substituting the Zeibach-Witten map into here.
Which illustrates the point that saying that alpha prime is small is not a meaningful statement.
Well, alpha prime is small, yeah, but metric
alpha
is risky.
Alpha prime is dimension.
Oh, thank you.
Alpha prime is alpha prime.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why did you need volume element for identity
formula? Volume element?
Yes, we need the volume element, epsilon
I1. Oh, yeah, that's an interesting point. Actually, I didn't want to go into detail. But actually, if you write it in the x-coordinate, there is one of a Puffian, which serves as a volume element. I didn't want to go into detail, but if you write it, you find that the subfinal expression is independent of the choice of volume element. I was worried about exactly the point, but sorry for the rest of the audience. But if you write this as explicitly in terms of capital X, you see that because of the fact that you have dx divided by Puffian of theta, this serves as some kind of volume element. Yeah. Thank you. This is a good question, but I think I lost 90% of the audience. please come back. This is not a useful way to describe dynamics of it, but this is a useful way to understand interpret the result of solving dynamics. So Zeibach-Witten map is supposed to relate these two, and this is an explicit construction of that. But there are various field redefinition ambiguities in Zeibach-Witten map that has been extensively discussed by many people. It is interesting that string theory computation gives a one particular choice to fix a field redefinition ambiguity, which probably has some meaning, but I'm not too familiar with that. The other thing I found it rather interesting is that this relation between these two formulations of non-computational theory seems to be very closely related to the relation, possible relation between cubic string field theory and boundary string field theory, where I try to compare this with cubic string field theory, so where the action is simple and there are even star product. And here I want to compare this with boundary string field theory, where action is actually not known if you include all the massive string field, but physical interpretation is clear. And so it would be interesting to, of course, to understand the map between these two string field theories. And there are also things like there are singularity in the transformation, which also exist here. And probably there are, and this, yeah, so I don't, there are a list of things that I think there are analogous, but I don't go into
the reasoning of how they arrived at.
This is more, yeah, the thing is that this is more closely related to the sigma model
description right.
Of this, which is the basis of this boundary string field theory.
The other is sort of more based on looking at individual Feynman diagrams.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So this is more, so in some sense, field theoretical, whereas this is more conformal theoretical, conformal field theoretical. So anyway, so we just wanted to point out the analogy. I think it's been interesting to formulate the analogous to Zeiberg-Wittmann equation. What would be the analog of Zeiberg-Wittmann equation for this, things like that? It would be interesting thing to explore. Let me make one more comment. That is, I thought was rather interesting. Now, so we can also talk about the 2p brain charge. That is the maximum charge allowed unless you introduce transverse scalar field, as in the Myers effect. And in this case, this is equal to J1 to J2P, which is symmetric trace of XI1, XI2. So now I believe you can see the pattern. So I just plug in those things. And then exponential IKX. That's it. If you are careful about what symmetric trace is, this is the definition. Then what interesting thing that you can prove that this is independent of the gauge field configuration. And this just is like that. So this gives you the gauge invariant definition of the rank of the gauge group. There has been actually, if you are into this subject, there was some confusion about what the rank of a gauge group is, because the gauge symmetry of non-commutative theory is un times u infinity, but that is isomorphic to u infinity. So what, where is the m? But there is actually gauge invariant observable which measures m. And the point is that, as was pointed out recently in a paper by Harvey, that we have to be very careful what we mean by u infinity. We have to actually introduce some kind of notion of compactness to the definition of the group, which has not been completely clarified. And similarly, you can prove this identity when this AI of x is in some sense compact operator. If A of x is really a very funny operator, then you can change this capital N. But for any...
And it's sort of a scale-dependent quantity, right? It's,
yeah.
And what?
This is a topological... I would have said that this is a topological object. Namely, if you make infinitesimal variation of capital X, then this is invariant.
Right, so there's no scale dependence.
No, what I'm saying is that if you would put the system on torus, then depending on the scale or the temperature, the non-commutative equation, you will behave like theories of different rank depending on the size of the torus. And this entropy is only the limit for the torus going to infinity. But at different scales, you will find different. The non-commutative theory will start behaving like an experimental part of it.
Yeah.
So
index theorem that guarantees that n is an integer.
Well. In this construction, it is. I do not know. this is some topological invariant that I'm not totally familiar with.
So you have an
Can it into the definition?
Yeah, right. It's a number of vectors in taking Ritter trace.
So where did you have to use that you were an heterist?
No, I did not use
that you were not an heterist.
I think it's important because I have to use the fact that AI decays sufficiently faster at infinity. Mm-hmm. And if you are on a torus and it's finite everywhere, probably you can change it.
Right, so it's sort of an infrared.
Yeah, it's an infrared. So if you put in a torus, then... Yeah, I haven't thought about carefully on the case of a torus, but I think this is important that if you are evaluating it at, for the top brain charge, and if you put it on torus, by T duality it's kind of ambiguous whether you are evaluating top charge or not. And but I can only say about the proof.
I'm a little bit confused about that. This is just the total number of
DP brain, no, D2P brain.
D brain. So if you put it on a torus, how does that change?
No, the only thing is, it's indeed true that this is a topological invariant, but the question whether it's the rank or not depends on your scale.
Okay, whether so there might be some other topological invariant. It's the rank that's related to this plus some non-trivial
duality
function.
The Morita. Again, it's the Morita.
Okay, so that's more or less all I want to talk about. These observables. There are other observables you can define, for example, energy momentum tensor. And of course, for example, if you compute energy density out of energy momentum tensor, you again get something like this. So this is actually equal to Diesel brain density, which should be if you think that it is coming from matrix theory, because in M theory, the Diesel brain, the number of Diesel brain is the same as the energy in if you interpret matrix theory as discrete light quantized M theory. So anyway, so there are other observables that you can evaluate. So this is the end of the first part of my talk, and I'm afraid that I should speed up. But if there is any question so far, please. So all I did so far is very simple. I just give you a prescription to define gauge invariant observables. And I give the explicit expressions of them for the brain density in the case of non-commutative theories. So as I promised, I'm going to change the sign of commutation relations. So now I have plus here. And so for example, that will propagate into definition minus here, etc. And then I go on to use that to evaluate the brain density of various non-commutative solitons that has been studied so far. So let me start with the simplest one first. So start with 2 plus 1 dimension, so we are on 2 brain. So theta ij is just 0, theta minus theta 0. So x1, x2 are harmonic oscillators. And so we take place in harmonic oscillator basis. Now, Gross and Nekrasov showed that the most general solution of non-commutative Yamil theory, in this case, the static solution, are of this form. So let me explain. Where U is called the shift operator, so that U dagger U is equal to 1, and U dagger is equal to 1 minus. So A is M-independent orthogonal state in this harmonic oscillator. It can be any. Actually, the final result is independent of the choice of this basis. Lambda is some moduli of the solution. That's it. So this is the most general solution to Yamil theory in 2 plus 1 dimension, static solution. So let's evaluate the Zeiberg-Witten map. In this case, the only non-trivial one is D0 brain density, because you have D0 and D2, but D2 is the same as the rank of this one, so you have only D0 brain density. So we want to evaluate DJK, which is trace of e to the ikx, and it is to be identified with a Fourier transform of the commutative field strengths and the background diesel brain density, which I believe is what Eva was asking earlier. So we want to extract this by computing this object. And this can be easily computed. We just use e to the I, but actually I'm running out of time, so let me just write down the answer. If you substitute this into here, do a simple calculation, what you get is this is, in fact, you have this term, which cancels against this term. And the other term is just this. So that's simple. You just have vortices. So we find that for this solution, oh, actually, here I Fourier transformed it. Excuse me. So after Fourier transform, I get delta of x minus lambda a. So lambda a is the location of the vortex. And so the point is that, for example, if you are near one of the delta function, then you can regard the gauge field as purely the vortex solution. So this is, of course, a singular solution. And normally, we wouldn't consider that in gauge theory. But the point is that in non-commutative variable, these are completely regular solutions. For example, the action is finite, etc. And what happens is that although this is delta function-like, but in the action of this commutative variable, there are infinitely many derivatives, so you can smoothen out this singularity and make the action finite. That seems to be what is happening. So the action is finite. This is spatially singular. And this has delta function localization.
This kind of suggests that the action just doesn't make sense in commutative
variables,
right?
It has infinitely many derivatives.
Non-local.
Yeah, it's highly non-local.
Yeah,
it's highly non-local. So, I can show you more weird things. wait until that. And so, more weird thing happens when you extend this to higher dimension. So this was two dimension, but it's easy to generalize this to higher dimension. And so in this case, you take theta ij to be like this. So we have 2p of them. And then we have p sets of harmonic oscillators. And then we do the same thing by appropriate shift operator. And then we can compute this, and then you find that this is equal to Parfian of theta plus m of delta x. So m is the rank of this object. So you see that the diesel brain densities are, again, delta function-like and localized at the point. And there is the background diesel brain density. So in this case, this is diesel brain density. But weird thing is that all other the 2 brain density with n is equal to 2, 4, all the way to 2p are trivial. There are no non-trivial d brain density for this solution except for the original one coming from the background B field. So in particular, if you evaluate d 2p minus 2 brain charge, then you find that Fij is identically equal to 0. This is very, very weird, because Fij is a dynamical variable in the commutative description, which is identically equal to 0. However, we have a non-trivial configuration in the non-commutative variable. Now, how can that be possible? I don't know. Very, very funny. Well, if this was non-abelian, then it's okay. But here, we have so far been talking about abelian gauge theory. It's weird that you have abelian theory and like that, and then, but we still have this.
So
charge is non-zero. D0 brain charge is non-zero, but of course, there are corrections, alpha prime corrections to D0 brain density if you write it expressively.
Right,
so this is not just a wedge of F.
Right.
But let me say...
Is that solution like
gauge transform to
right?
No. If U was unitary, so, but it is not. Yeah, and in fact, it has non-trivial diesel brain density. Let me give an argument of why it should have been like that, even though this is weird, but there is no way out. Let me explain why it is. The reason is that if you look at this, and if you compute Say suppose we are in four dimensions. Okay? Suppose we are in four dimensions. Then if you compute this, you see that this obeys self-duality equation. Because if you take product of them, u dagger u cancels out because of that. And theta, commutator of theta is self-dual. So that means that this is also self-dual. Okay? So if this is self-dual, f is given by trace of this one. So therefore, this has also satisfied the self-dual equation. Okay? There is no instanton solution for Abelian gauge theory as we know, if you believe that it gets sufficiently infinite. So therefore, it is consistent. Being zero is consistent with the fact that there is no solution.
Singular. Singular ones.
No, 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 no. Even singular. For example, delta function like is also not allowed. For this one, I think. Anyway. Yeah, so that's very weird. I think that what is happening most likely, let me give you one possible interpretation of why this is happening like that. I believe for finite alpha prime, what is happening is that FRIJ is something like 1 over alpha prime to the e to the minus 1 over alpha prime. This is conjecture. For finite alpha prime, the solution is like that. Okay? So then if you take alpha prime goes to 0, if the dimension is greater than 2, this goes to 0. But if you take this, raise this to the power of p is a 2p is the dimension of this. This is alpha prime to 2p, and e to the minus x square over alpha prime times p. And alpha prime goes to 0, gives you a delta function. This root of delta function is 0. That can be an interpretation, but I don't know. I think it's kind of very curious that why something like that is happening. I only have 5 minutes. So I have many other solutions that I wanted to Zweig-Witten transform, but you have a question. Go ahead.
The time limit is not strictly enforced.
Yeah, but I will try to be a good boy this time. Last time I was very bad. Yeah, there are other solutions, including deep brain piercing D3 brain, which is there to Koji's heart, and I apologize that I'm not talking about that. Let me talk about instantons in four dimensions, which is kind of interesting. So these solutions are delta functions, and those are singular. So let me describe something non-singular. And so we will consider, so actually you can show that any solution that can be constructed using this kind of shift operator method are all delta function-like. So if you want to look for some solutions whose Zweig-Witten transform is smooth, you have to go beyond that. And there are such solutions in higher dimensions, such as instantons. And so we consider U2 instanton in four dimensions. And this is discussed. I will discuss the one that was constructed by Furuchi. And so for simplicity, I take theta to be anti-self-dual in four dimensions. So this is anti-self-dual. Now, theta breaks parity, so that means that there is a qualitative difference between self-dual solution and anti-self-dual solution. So anti-self-dual solution is the one that was studied by Furuchi. And this one can shrink to a zero size. There is a parameter which controls the size of instanton, and it can shrink to 0 point. And in fact, in that limit, this becomes the type of solutions that I just described. So Fuji's solution gives you a deformation from that solution. But now, this is a U1 solution, but we are now talking about U2 gauge group. And this solution is BPS, where if the background theta has the same anti-self duality as the solution itself. But it's not, and in fact it's unstable if theta is not exactly anti-self dual. And those things are discussed by Aganajic, Gopakuma, Niwara, and Strominger, what they call unstable solutions, are the type that, here, when you go away from anti-self duality. And then there are self-dual solutions. And those are the ones discussed by Nekrasov. So the one of the first, actually, well, really the first solution on non-commutative gauge theory discussed. And in this case, the small instanton singularity is resolved. So that was one of the interesting aspects. But I will focus on this solution. So, because of the time, I'll just show you the solution and show you the result of the Liebig-Witten transform. And so the solution can be expressed in this way, where this is 2 by 2 matrix valued operator, and then this is a parameter, there is a parameter which controls the size of instanton, I think divided by theta for dimensional purpose, and 2n plus 4 plus rho square over theta xi 2n plus 4 plus rho square theta. Zero. 2n plus rho square over theta xi 2n plus rho square over theta. And U is a 2 by 2 matrix given by this formula. Where A1 is a harmonic oscillator combination of these coordinates, etc. And N is a number operator. So this is Fruchi's solution. And rho can be, as we will see, regarded as the size of the solution. And so this does not manifestly has the form of the projection operator construction. But in the limit of rho goes to zero limit, it takes this form. And you can see this explicitly, that as rho goes to zero, xi becomes u naught dagger, xi u naught, where u naught dagger is an identity matrix, that u naught dagger, u naught is a projection operator.
What is A2?
Oh, A2 is, I neglected doing that. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. So this is a definition. And in the limit of rho goes to zero limit, D0 brain density becomes like that. Okay? So in the remaining minus 5 minutes, I will describe the instanton density of this solution. So we try to evaluate this thing, and so basically the remaining thing is try to evaluate e to the trace of e to the ikx with x with this one. Okay, so that can be done. And, so let's evaluate. We can evaluate this actually in two different limits. First, what happens if you turn on the size slightly, so deform this away from this? Then the solution, the expression for D0 brain density. So this is a leading order effect that I just wrote. And then there is a correction which I can write. In this way. And then there is higher order row correction. So it doesn't look very illuminating, but let me explain what the behavior of this fellow is. So let's consider first the case when you look at the neighborhood or origin of the instanton. There you can see that this is equal to theta square over 2, and then you can write delta function by using Laplace operator. So you have this derivative operator acting on this, so this gives you delta function. And in the neighborhood of x small, you can evaluate this using steepest descent, and then this becomes so basically, what this does is modifying the structure of the delta function. So it's conceivable that if you sum up all the rows, the delta function is modified into smooth profile. And we'll see that in the opposite limit, that this is the case. Now, x squared larger than theta, then this behaves like, again, you can evaluate this integral using steepest descent, and then this behaves like, so basically the first order deformation gives you the Gaussian or distribution of the width determined by theta. So this is consistent with what the intuition suggests, that when we go to non-commutative theory, the size of the object should be of order theta, but actually we don't see that in the limit of zero size instanton. In zero size instanton limit, really the instanton is peaked at delta function like at origin. But by just turning on the first order in row, you start seeing, so generically for finite row, we have this kind of Gaussian profile. We can also compute the trace of the field strength. And then to this order, you can show that this vanishes.
So this is smeared out of the size of order theta.
So theta, yeah. The first order variation is smeared out of order theta.
But this expression still
contains delta function. It contains delta function, but I think this is an artifact of the fact that we are expanding in power of rho. I think by
Yeah, but since x is
smaller. Yeah, because x is larger than zeros, I'm not seeing the delta function.
Ah.
Right?
So as you shrink rho, the size gets hung up at theta.
Yeah. What? Yeah, so what is happening? So if I draw this, so what is happening is that we have a delta function which is smeared out by the order of rho. And then for large rho, but it has a finite tail, and then goes very slowly, and then there is the size of theta. And then the height over here is of order rho square. So it is something like that. Now, we can also evaluate this for large rho. And then what one finds and this is actually, I was very surprised, frankly, to see this. Because this exactly matches with the instanton density of commutative solitons. Namely, in the commutative theory, we have epsilon ijkl, fij minus theta ij, fkl minus theta kl. And then with commutative monopole solution, which is like that, where sigma ij is given by this familiar Tofufto symbol with Pauli matrix. You can plug this into here, evaluate this, and to this order it exactly matches. And that I was surprised because we don't have a right to expect that. You can show, so this is a background instanton density, you can show that if you assume that the dependence of this coefficient on x is polynomial, then there is no theta correction here. So this agreement is just a consistency check if you assume polynomial dependent. But this can have a theta correction, and so I don't know why it has to agree this much, but I thought this was pretty. Anyway, so that's the large behavior. So it has this Lorentzian type tail when rho is very large. So that's the behavior of this solution. Once again, we computed the trace part of field strength, and it vanishes again. And so we conjecture, actually, the trace part of field strength is identically equal to zero for this solution. And for exactly the same reason that I gave before. Namely, these solutions, the Fluchin solution is a solution to the following equation. So by just taking trace of that, you see that trace of field strength has to also obey the self-dirigible equation, but it is abelian. So therefore, so there is no solution except for singular ones, maybe, possibly. So it is consistent that it is zero. But this suggests an interesting thing. So we have been hearing that in non-commutative theories, the U1 part and the SUN part do not decouple. And this is evidently so in non-commutative description. But it seems like here you can construct a non-commutative instanton solution where, if I believe this conjecture, the U1 part is totally decoupled. And in fact, one can argue that although one do not know the action for AI, but if it is expressed in a single trace of some very complicated functional on F, then clearly U1 part and SUN part decouples. So this suggests maybe that this unknown action is of that type. And so that's one possible explanation for the fact. Now, there are other applications of no...
something you would arrive at
tree level. Yeah. If you compute this, then you just have single trace. So I think I think this is very well founded. And so I think interesting thing is that although we say that in non-commutative theory, U1 part and SUN part is not decoupled, but that may be an artifact of the use of non-commutative variable. And if you look closely, it is actually sum of two decoupled systems. Although it's very non-local if you try to see it clearly.
One simple trace with one decoupled. When we have say F U1 times the square of the commutator of two.
Isn't that all? I have to think about that. But I thought that was the case. So let me respond to that later. So this is more or less what I wanted to say. We constructed Zyberg with the map and other DP brain solutions, and this gives an interpretation of various solutions. There are other applications of Zyberg with the map, for example. I think one of the interesting things one might try to do is to use this, since this gives a local gauge invariant observable, one can compute, say, correlation function of those. For example, one can try to compute the correlation function of this in non-commutative Chan-Simon theory, which would be interesting. Actually, it might as well tell us about various transition of quantum Hall effect. And those would be the computing correlation function of open Wilson line, which would be an interesting non-commutative counterpart of Witten's computation of Jones polynomials. So there are potentially various interesting applications that one can make of this type of computation in other contexts. So anyway, so that's all I wanted to say. Thank you for your attention for the extra 10 minutes.
Yes. Let's see, I thought that you derived the Seibert-Witten map by looking at these currents,
yes,
looking at expressions for them in both the non-commutative form and the commutative form, and saying they're physical quantities, they have to be equal.
Right.
So why are you surprised that the expressions agree, say, in this case?
Well, here, so Zyberg, I derived Seibert-Witten map for trace part of this one. Now, this can get large alpha prime correction. This is, there are various reasons to think, and actually, Oka and I have more or less a proof that there is no alpha prime correction to this one. But this one, for example, can and do have alpha prime correction. You can actually show by that in one case, there is an alpha prime correction to this formula. So it was rather surprising.
But still it comes in an expansion. but is it possible to write down the term linear in theta that preserves the anti-self duality?
linear in theta. Which part are you talking about?
No, the thing is that you expected the one over rho to the 6. That would be have been could have had a linear in theta.
Correct? Yeah, yeah. This could have, for example, something like that.
Yeah, but can you write down such things?
Well, you're saying that there are some parity considerations that you can make prohibit.
Tell you that it could happen.
It's very likely because things should not happen without reason.
Right. Okay. the parity then.
Is it?
What's this BPS?
This is BPS.
So then can you, there may be supersymmetries implying if you consider a D-brain probe that is probing the system?
Oh, no, self-development.
So how about those things? For small rho, there is explicit theta dependence. So I don't think this is constrained by BPS only. This is only for large rho that we have this structure. Total charge is, of course, constrained by BPS consideration. But is it also true? Do you also expect a profile to be preserved by?
Well, it can be probed by a BPS probe. So there is this thing that Douglas, maybe I'm confused, but Douglas considered the system of D9, D5 range, performing an instant gun, and then probing with a D1 range.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember how much supersymmetry, but this probably has any probe one supersymmetry, four dimensions. So I'm not sure if. I mean, he was sensitive to the probe and it came from direct analogy.
I see.
The open strings, the D1 and the D5 and D9. So I'm not sure whether it's really protected or not.
But obviously, in this limit, it's not protected, so it's confused about to what extent such argument can apply.
Further questions?
Okay, thanks again.